Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 5 of Game On with Cody and John.
This episode's big deal?
Critical mass.
Do mass market board games have a place in the gaming hobby? We'll talk about it.
And on this episode's Buy, Try It or Nigh, Wizard's Gambit, we'll find out if it has the ingredients to make a magical game.
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Howdy gamers, you're listening to Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of board games, card games, tabletop games of all kinds. How you doing, Cody?
Doing okay. The Colts, very disappointing this week.
Oh man, again, a painful game to watch.
Yeah, we might miss the playoffs.
It's not looking good right now.
No, but at least we have plenty of board games to play in the interim there.
And you know, I still have plenty of great Texas football to watch. University of Texas, the number one team in the country right now, after beating Oklahoma and Missouri.
Mizzou, as it were.
Anyway.
And the Indiana University football squad, well, they try.
Yeah, they try. They try hard, you know. Right. That's good.
But luckily for you listeners, we will not fail as the Hoosiers do. We've got a great big deal.
That's right. We're going to be talking about mass market games. Games that you find in your local big box retailer. Everything from Monopoly to Trouble to Sorry to whatever else you might find. We're going to talk about them all.
Sure, and if past emails are any indication, a lot of Monopoly fans out there.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to just talk about what kind of place those games have in the gaming hobby and why some gamers tend to turn their nose up at them a little bit.
Sure, and we'll also talk about a new game you might want to add to your game collection in our Buy, Try, or Deny, Wizard's Gambit.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to get a nice copy of this game from Griffin Forge Games, and we're going to review it and tell you our thoughts on it. But, as always, we start off every episode with the Game On Inbox, and that starts right
now.
It's time for the Game On Inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find.
Welcome to the Game On Inbox. We're going to start things off like we always do by telling you all about some games we've played lately. John, why don't you start us off?
All right, well, we're going to start off by talking once again about the number one game on Board Game Geek, Agricola.
The Grick.
We've dubbed it The Grick. And we had an opportunity to play a three-player game of this.
Finally.
Me, Cody, and Single L. And actually, 2 days prior to that, I got to play with Single L and his wife, who we're going to call Double L.
Don't ask.
Yeah. Anyway, and we played a couple games of that, had a really great time, and you guys already know from listening to the podcast here that I really like this game. I think it's extremely well designed, lots of replayability, but I wanted to make sure that we got Cody's comments on Agricola on audio tape or whatever. go ahead and tell us what you think.
Whatever the kids are listening to these days.
Exactly. Tell us, Cody, what did you think of Agricola?
This game is giving me fits lately. It's when we played it, I was bored to tears. It was just this never-ending, boring game.
He literally did not talk for the first 7 rounds. Like, he had this look on his face, like, wide-eyed, like, what are we playing here?
It was not fun. But the past few days, I've been thinking about it, and for some reason, I want to play it again. It's the weirdest feeling. It's like I had such a terrible time with it. But yet, I want to sign up for some more punishment.
Yeah, you finally realize what a great theme farming is.
Oh, well, you know, it is exciting. It's like, oh, did my sheep breed? Oh, they sure did. Fantastic. Yeah. I'm going to sow some oats.
There are no oats in the game. It's grain.
Yeah, see, that's
a nondescript grain.
That's how much I liked it.
Okay. So we'll probably get that one to the table again, but still a big thumbs up in my book.
Indeed. And this weekend I got to play a game which I think is much more fun than Agricola, the Red Dragon Inn and its sequel, the Red Dragon Inn 2. Not just a clever name.
Clever sequel name there.
If you don't know about it, it's basically kind of a take that sort of a game that centers around kind of like your role-playing heroes. You've just gotten back from slaying the dragon. You're at the tavern trying to get each other drunk and steal each other's gold. And we got to combine both sets of Red Dragon and Red Dragon Inn 2, and we had the biggest we had was a 6-player game of it, and it got kind of crazy, but it was a lot of fun.
Wow, do you need the expansion? Is it an expansion or a second edition of the
game? It's a standalone game. It's okay. But each game can play up to 4, but you can combine them for a maximum of 8.
Oh, wow, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it is a good game.
Yeah, cool. That's from the folks at Slugfest Games.
Good old Slugfest Games. Yeah, can't go wrong with them.
Good guys. So since we're going to be talking about mass market games in our big deal segment, I thought I'd mention a couple of mass market games that we played here in the last couple of weeks. One of them is a new game from Hasbro or Parker Brothers or Mattel or I don't know, whoever it is that makes these games.
Our research department is getting fired.
And that's the game Sorry Sliders.
Oh, yes.
So for those of you who are familiar with the original game Sorry... Sorry.
It has nothing to do with it.
No. The only thing that's the same is the pieces that are... It's the same shape. The real typical round-topped Sorry piece that you're used to seeing. I've heard this game described as being the poor man's Crokinole. And I think that's really really true. What they've done is they've taken these Sorry pieces and they've installed a ball bearing in the bottom of them. So they slide really easily on hard surfaces. And so this game consists of a board in the middle and some tracks, and you kind of slide in and you can knock people out to get certain scores. And there's even a version where you have a hole in the middle, and if you get your little piece into the hole in the middle, you can move one of your pawns to the end. And what do you think of this game, Cody?
It is awesome.
It is.
I love dexterity-based games and the fact that I'm undefeated in Sorry Sliders.
Yeah, that's probably a whole other Thank big you. Deal topic Thank of... The effect of having won or lost every game of it as affecting whether you like a game or not.
Hey, I'm just that good.
Yeah, he was pretty impressive. I think even my son, we played this with my 5-year-old son, and I think he was better than me at this game.
Oh, when I thrashed him.
Yeah.
I told him.
He knocked him on the ground, made him cry.
No, I didn't really.
But that's a fun game. Sorry, Sliders. And once again, continuing with the saga of my new purchase of the Wii, I've rented the game Tiger Woods PGA 2009.
So you can sit out with a knee injury?
Yeah, that's right. You just sit there and...
it's so immersive.
Rock your baby, Sam. But no, I really enjoyed the game to a certain extent. The part where you swing the club, like the full swing of the club, that was really cool. And you took advantage of, again, the Wii-ness of the Wii. But the putting was just absolutely... almost impossible. I mean, I got so frustrated after 2 or 3 holes of triple and quadruple bogeys that I just didn't really want to play anymore.
Threw your clubs in a tree.
I wish there was a way you could do that in the game. That'd be good. Press this button to break the club over your knee.
Happy Gilmore 09 in there.
Yeah. So anyway, go check that one out if you like the Tiger Woods experience. But I actually enjoy it more on like Xbox than on the Wii.
We have some game news that's coming to the game on Inbox. But first, we have an event announcement.
That's right. Being podcasters and relatively new podcasters, we've taken a lot of inspiration from other gaming podcasts. And one of the ones that Cody and I listen to quite often is called Fear the Boot.
Fear the Boot.
Which is produced by some guys in St. Louis. And it's mainly about tabletop role-playing games. And they have a really cool sort of roundtable panel discussion. A lot of fun. Definitely recommend that you check it out. We'll put the link to their show in the show notes.
But
the guys at Fear the Boot have started... their own tradition. I think they would even call it a gaming holiday that they're trying to start up.
I think so.
And they have dubbed this Worldwide Wing Night.
Woo!
And the whole point of it is that you get together with your friends, you eat wings, you drink the beverage of your choice, and you play games.
I like it.
And so they're having their Worldwide Wing Night 5 on November the 8th. And so they've actually put a call out to some to their listeners and also to other podcasters to get involved in. Cody and I are really interested in having our own Worldwide Wing Night event right here in the great city of Indianapolis.
Yes, the gaming capital word. We are stepping up to the plate and we will host the Indianapolis edition of the Worldwide Wing Night. Ours will be a little different from the Fear the Boot one as since our podcast is primarily about board games, we will be hosting board games. But John, why don't you give us the details of where we're going to have this?
Okay, so we're going to be having this Worldwide Wing Night 5 Game On Edition at the Buffalo Wild Wings on the south side of Indy, just off of US 31. So those of you who live in the area, you can check that out. Of course, you can go to BW3's website and find out where that is.
And we'll have a link to the location in the show notes.
Yep, we sure will. And so we're just going to be, Cody and I will bring some games with us. We're going to eat some wings, drink some beverage, and play some games. That's Absolutely. All that's all it is. Going to keep it as simple as possible. It's not just a real informal thing.
Sure, and that's going to be from 7 to 11 p.m. on Saturday, November the 8th at the BW3s that we mentioned. And if you're coming, definitely drop us a line at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And we'll plan for you. We'll have a sign there, so once you walk in the door, you'll be able to find us right away.
Right, just look for the big GO logo.
That's right. Find that, and we will get to the eating and get to the gaming, but please no sauce on our games.
Yeah, keep the wing sauce away from the games.
So again, check out the show notes for all the information you'll need, and we'll also be posting a thread on the guild, anyone who's coming to that.
All right, so we look forward to seeing you all there. So a couple other news items that we wanted to bring up. Both of them actually have to do with your favorite game company and mine, Fantasy Flight Games.
They should really pay us.
They should. Hey, we should get on the phone about that.
Contact Kevin Wilson immediately.
Well, the first piece of news is that Fantasy Flight has announced that they are actually dropping the company Rackham from their distribution. They had sort of picked up.
They just picked them up. Not
just
too long
a few
ago.
Months ago, it seems. Yeah. And that gave them the rights to games like AT-43 and Confrontation. These are miniature skirmish games. I actually was involved in AT-43 for a little while.
It's
and
a good game.
It's
a little pricey.
Game. Yeah, and so not sure what that means for those two games, but it's probably not a good thing.
I'd like to see. I have no experience with Confrontation, but AT-43 was a good game, and I'd like to see someone pick it up, and I think it's got a place in the gaming world.
I agree. Now, the other piece of news about Fantasy Flight is a very exciting thing for me because I am a real big fan of the television show Lost.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And a couple of years ago, they did something called the Lost Experience Alternate Reality Game. So those of you who are really familiar with all things internet will know that an alternate reality game is kind of a viral marketing technique that includes real websites and real email addresses, a lot of times real locations in the real world that all link together to form this story that's meant to advertise a product. And so the folks at Fantasy Flight have posted on their website some information about a partnership with this company called Jinteki Games or Jinteki Corporation. And it's a very strange text and the way that it's phrased, and some of the folks on Board Game Geek have picked up that maybe Jinteki is not a real company. And so there's been this sort of rabbit hole that people have gone down with these email addresses and websites and secret codes that have come up on the Fantasy Flight website. So we'll post a link to the main thread on Board Game Geek that talks about this. But you know, if you're really interested in this kind of thing or in this sort of internet search, go check out that thread. It looks like it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, sounds really cool. Yeah, gotta check that out.
And they're talking about a game that's going to be released in December. There's been some speculation that it might be the new version of Dune that that they're going to be releasing, possibly in that Twilight Imperium universe. But not really sure. That's just a speculation at this point. So go check out that Fantasy Flight Games thing.
Will do. We have received some listener feedback in the Game On inbox, the first of which comes from Mr. Jason Spears, who says, quote, "The echoing of the email address is driving me nuts."
Man, it's driving me nuts, too.
We're done.
Yeah, we're definitely done. And we actually wrote an email back to Jason explaining that the very first few episodes, being a new podcast, we want to make sure you guys know how to get in touch with us. And so we did the whole gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's the only time we'll mention that.
Exactly. We're done. When we say it, we're only going to say it one time.
That's right. When we say it, we are only going to say it one time. And our next bit of listener feedback comes from listener Toby Otero, who, in summary of his email, mentioned video games as part of a gateway game of its own into game nights, games like, you know, Guitar Hero and Rock Band and things of that nature.
Yeah, he said that he recently had a game night where he used a Rock Band as kind of a way to draw in some friends who weren't really into board games. And so he said it was sort of like a bait and switch. When they arrived, he had games of Ticket to Ride and I think Thebes set up and ready to go. And then after playing those games, then they got into the Rock Band. So it was a way for those non-gamers to get exposed to hobby board games, but then also got to play some fun video games. I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's a very good idea. Yeah, so thanks for submitting that, Toby. And we encourage everyone to send us feedback at the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com. And we have results from our contest from last episode, where we challenged you, the listeners, to come up with a name for our upcoming game night, where we'll be inviting non-gamers, experienced gamers, all sorts to come and play over here at John's house. We ask that you don't confuse this with the World Wide Wing Night.
No, that's a completely different event. That's kind of more under the auspices of Fear the Boot.
Indeed. This is our own endeavor here. And we had many great entries.
That's right. Yeah, we'll tell you a couple of the ones that we liked the best, and then we'll tell you our winner.
Sure.
We really did like the one that was just the Uncommon Game Night. That was a nice play on our podcast slogan.
Yep. I liked Cody and John's
semi-irregular game thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice.
That was good.
And we even had actually another podcaster, Scott Nicholson, who put in his entry with the Game On-a-thon, and then next year we could call it the Game On and On-a-thon.
I like that. I think by year five, the Game On and On and On and On and On.
Yeah, it's not going to fit on a sign anymore.
No.
All right, so we looked through all the great entries that we got, and we did pick what we thought was the best representation of what we wanted to do for our game night. And Cody, why don't you tell us who our big winner is?
Our big winner is Mr. Jesse Hickel, and his entry was, and the name of our gaming event,
The Game On Invitational.
Insert majestic music there.
Exactly, yes. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. I like it.
So, yeah, we're going to be hosting the first annual Game On Invitational, and we still haven't set a date for it yet. With the Worldwide Wing Night thing, we've put it off for just a little bit, but it'll be sometime in the next month or two.
We'll keep you posted, and it should be a good night. We'll definitely, as it gets closer, we'll announce, you know, just kind of the different, I guess, archetypes of people that'll be there, our game list and things of that nature. So stay tuned for that.
We'll keep you in the loop.
Now, we do have a contest for this episode because we keep you, the common gamer, in mind here.
If you've noticed in our guild on Board Game Geek, I've actually uploaded about four or five pictures of Cody and I doing various things at Gen Con. And there's a great picture of me with Dr. Reiner Knizia.
Yeah, of all the pictures I've seen, that's definitely one of them.
And
I like the black bow tie. That's
yeah, and against the black shirt.
That's
no,
nice.
No one else can pull that off. And
Doctor.
So one of the nice things about having the guild on Board Game Geek is that we do have this image gallery to go along with the forum and the calendar and everything else that goes with it. So we wanted to encourage you, the listeners, to contribute to our image gallery. And so that's sort of what we've made the topic of our contest for this episode.
Yes. All you have to do is upload a picture of you and your family and or friends playing a game. Even if it's Carcassonne, that will do fine.
Absolutely.
We just want to see kind of you and your native element playing games and just build our Game On community as a whole.
Right, because it's always good to be able to put a face with an avatar, and so we've definitely done that.
If you can afford an avatar. I don't have the geek gold for an avatar.
All right, well, a name to, or a face to go with a name and micro badge.
A micro badge.
Single micro badge.
One. And this will be a random draw. Sorry, Sam Healy. And the winner of this game will get a game that we have just played. It will be our demo copy of Wizard's Gambit from Griffin Forge Games.
That's right. Like I mentioned, Griffin Forge was kind enough to send us a copy of Wizard's Gambit.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for us to demo and to review. And so we don't want to hold that back for ourselves. That's not the reason why we, when we get games like that, we want to be able to give them back to the listeners. And so this game won't be new in shrink wrap, but it's been played two times, and I put everything in nice plastic bags, as I tend to do. And
very nice. we are passing the gaming goodness on to you.
That's right.
So upload an image of you and yours playing a game, and you might win a slightly new copy of Wizard's Gambit.
Okay, well, the last thing we want to mention in the Game On Inbox this episode is a new feature on the Game On podcast website.
Air quotes.
Exactly.
Feature.
We've included, if you go to gameonpodcast.com, you're going to find on the right side of the website a donation button. And if you click on that, that'll allow you to send us a donation. And we are definitely want to let you know up front that as gamers and as, you know, Cody and I just being friends and podcasters, we are not in this hobby to make money at
no,
all.
No, no. We're in it to spend money.
We're in it to spend money, as I'm sure a lot of you all are too. So, but we do have some expenses that go along with producing a podcast, and we've already put in a good amount of money to just be able to produce a quality product for you guys. And so we have a couple of other things that we're interested in purchasing to help to further the Game On love. We'd like to be able to purchase some portable recording equipment to be able to go to conventions and do interviews there and maybe even record some of our game sessions and stuff like that. So things like that, being able to purchase games for reviews and our buy, try, or deny segment, and also just to cover the bandwidth costs for our, sure, our podcast. That's really the only reason why we have it up there. And so if
100% of donations will go toward the show.
That's right. And for no other purpose, definitely. But we just wanted to mention that that's going to be there. And if you like the show and you feel like clicking on it and throwing us a couple bucks, we sure would appreciate it.
Yes, we would. Well, what do you say we get into an even bigger deal? This episode's big deal, Critical Mass.
Let's do it. And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal? Well, welcome to the big deal. This episode's big deal is called
Critical Mass.
Yep, we're going to talk to you today about mass market board games. These are going to be the games that you'll find in your local Gigantor retailer, like in the United States here, Walmart, Target, Meijer. But anyway, these are going to be games that you're not going to have to go to your friendly local gaming store to find, just things from Monopoly and on from that. So I guess I just wanted to start off the discussion just by asking the question to you, Cody, about...
I'm the only one here, so that's good.
these mass market games, the ones like Monopoly, I feel sometimes like mass market games are kind of a hindrance to the gaming hobby.
Yeah, it's almost looked
would
on,
you agree?
Yeah, it's almost looked on like a black mark. I don't know. It's like, you know, I like Monopoly. It's like, oh well, you know, why do you like Monopoly? it just seems like gamers are afraid to embrace mass market games for whatever reason.
Yeah, you know, I find myself doing that too. When I tell people that I'm into gaming and they say, "Oh, I like board games too," and they'll rattle off, "I like the Game of Life. I like Trivial Pursuit." And
I like Trivial
Pursuit. You know, I do too, actually. But it makes me always want to say, "Well, if you like that game, well, you would love Ticket to Ride and this game and that game." And we sort of feel the need to evangelize, I guess, sure, our position as gamers. And I guess I'm just kind of curious, and the question I'm just sort of asking here is what is it about those mass market games that gives them that black mark?
Well, I would say most of the time because they're not very good. I mean, I'll be straight up. Your opinion may vary, but I think most of the time they're just not very good. I mean, there are some classics out there. You know, you've got your Monopoly, Clue, Sorry, things like that that are of varying quality. It's like, I enjoy Clue, you might not, but, you know, I think the most of them, you know, Hello Kitty Island Adventure, you know, tends to put that black mark on the mass market game.
Yeah, you know, and I think that the fact that a lot of these games have been around for so long, and I think they've just become sort of an accepted part of culture of, you know, if you're a kid, then you got to learn how to play Uno, yep, and you got to learn how to play Monopoly, and you got to suffer through 1,000 games of Connect Four and or Battleship, you know.
Oh, Battleship's
fine. Okay. but you know, exactly the reactions that we're having here to these games, it's like, you know, some of us are saying, you know, we're sometimes saying that we really like, oh, yeah, I like Battleship, or we're saying, oh, I really hate this game. So it just seems like whenever I go into a big market store like that, that I'm always fighting to find something that I think is good. Mm-hmm. And And I think there's two big reasons why mass market games are kind of a challenge to the gaming hobby. And one of them is that it seems like most mass market games tend to be one of two categories. They're either party games or they're games that are centered around children, you know, marketed as family games.
Right.
But, the, you know, they're all games that are like ages six and up. And you either have that category of games like the Game of Life, Sorry, Trouble, or you're going to have games like Cranium to a certain extent, Taboo, Scattergories, you know, games that are party games. And I think that that's one main problem is that if those are the only two categories of games that are really represented, you're missing an awful lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, I think in the grand gaming scheme of things, that's just a very small cross-section of the potential there. And, you know, I think, I know party games are different, but with a lot of them, if you've played one, you know, you've played them all. They just kind of like you group into teams. It involves something silly.
Yeah.
Repeat ad nauseum, you know.
Maybe it's because when these companies that make these large market games are coming up with ideas, they're thinking about their audience, which is, you know, Joe Sixpack or Joe the Plumber. You know, who's going to be sitting down and playing games. And, you know, Joe the Plumber might have kids and Joe the Plumber might have a party every once in a while. Right. And, So those are two categories that seem to make a lot of sense. But if you look at a hobby game like Carcassonne or Agricola or something like that, you can't really think of a setting that those are going to be played in except in a
funeral.
All right. you know, except in a game night or some kind of gamer setting. You know, I guess it's
you're not just going to whip out Agricola and say, you know, let's farm.
No. So maybe that's one of the difficulties. I think another problem is that many mass market games are media tie-ins.
And usually bad ones.
And usually pretty bad ones. There's a few exceptions, but I think that is a real indication that these games are really being produced to make money.
Oh, you know?
I mean, just obviously. You know, there's a lot of games that are labors of love in your friendly local game store, and it's someone who's put all of their money and resources into making this one game because they think it's just a great game. But I think a lot of these mass market stores, they're just trying to crank out, you know, Risk the Transformers edition, Risk the
Star Wars edition,
Risk the Buffy the Vampire Slayer edition. You know?
You mentioned Lost earlier, and I was given as a Christmas present at work Lost the board game.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I promptly lost it because it was pretty terrible.
Oh, man.
It was, I don't even want to think about it. I think I gave it away as a gag gift the next year. I mean, it was pretty terrible.
Was that one of the ones that came with a DVD?
No, it was, I think you could, in the end, get it for like a dollar.
Oh, nice.
So
that good.
You know it's good.
Anything you find in the bin at Goodwill is probably not the best. But.
And something to go off on the party game, kid game sort of angle is that, and this may be a different topic entirely, but the whole ideal of like a family game night, I think, is becoming more and more rare. I mean, not a lot of families are like, hey, let's gather around and play Monopoly. You know, it's like, at the very best, it's, hey, let's play Wii or, you know.
Yeah.
It's like kind of that whole tabletop gaming experience is kind of going by the wayside.
Right. And I had a coworker who invited me over to a party that was specifically a Wii party. And he's got four children of his own, and it's definitely, the Wii is something that has brought his family together that they can all get together and do. You know, but that's something, that's a role that board games used to take.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that's a role that in my house, I really want board games to continue to take, is just to be something that can bring everybody to the table to have a good time. I had a great time playing Sorry Sliders with you and with my wife and with my son. Because it's just that kind of a game that brings people together.
Yeah.
And ironically, a mass market game.
That's right. Now, there are a few, I guess, elephants in the room when it comes to mass market games. I think chief among them would be Monopoly.
Oh, yeah.
And every edition, Texasopoly. And
I actually own Texasopoly.
Imagine that. Yeah. Star Wars Monopoly. And
They just opened up a game and calendar store in the mall that's right downtown in Indianapolis, and some coworkers and I went in there a few days ago and found that there actually were some hobby style board games. They had a copy of like World of Warcraft, the board game, and Settlers of Catan. They were all kind of in the back, but in the front, big as day, literally 40 different versions of Monopoly in one display. And you just got to kind of wonder why.
Now, as an aside, what is your personal opinion?
I really only have one beef with Monopoly, is that I just think that it's too long. I think it's a game that doesn't have a real good and well. It has a well-defined end game, but it's just one that's very difficult to attain. And so, unless you create some house rules to shorten the game, I think that you end up with a really long, onerous. Game.
And house rules is one of the things I think that makes Monopoly very unique, is that it seems like every house I've played Monopoly at has a different set of house rules. They may be very similar in some regards, but you know, some do the $500 in free parking and some don't. And you know,
yeah.
just all these kind of weird rules. I think it is a good game. I think it does drag on a little bit, but I guess just its age makes it so popular. I mean, it was around in the 30s. It's a product of its time, basically. And it's just managed to be a mainstay in American culture.
I guess it's one of those things where it's one of the few things that you can pull out a copy of with your son and your dad and your grandpa and your maybe even your great grandpa, and they can all say, "Oh, I played that," you know.
Right.
And so that maybe that's just that familiarity. I think with Uno is a good example of a card game that just everybody knows how to play. Oh. And Uno is not a bad game, but. Mm. You know, I can think of five card games I'd rather play than Uno.
Oh, yeah. Now, speaking of card games, kind of in more recent times, you're starting to see CCG booster packs in your Walmarts and your Targets, you know, so you'll see maybe packs of Magic cards and Pokemon cards and Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of different collectible card games, and even like the Pirates of the Spanish Main game,
yeah,
where they have
yeah.
the little collectible mm-hmm. pirate ships that you build. I found a lot of those in local Walmart and big stores.
And have you noticed they package them different?
They do, yeah. They put
it's
them,
weird.
Yeah, they put them in like those cardboard containers,
yeah,
or the cardboard backs that...
Almost like an action figure would come in, you know, with
yeah.
that kind of... I'm like, what? Why?
Yeah.
That's got to add some cost. I mean,
But and I guess that indicates that they are specifically... producing a portion of their print run for those big mass market stores. And I think for collectible card games, maybe the motivation again there is money, that it's like buying a pack of baseball cards, that if you can get a kid to buy one pack of baseball cards looking for that Alex Rodriguez, that they'll buy 10 packs. And same thing with Magic. It's got that sort of like addiction to it that will cause people to
single L that
no he's not addicted but you know that will cause people to continue to buy and buy.
Sure. And a lot of it, I think they've almost angled it as an impulse buy, because I'm seeing them more and more leaving the game section and getting closer to like to the front of the store, you know, where the kids are saying, you know, "Ooh, Yu-Gi-Oh!" And
yeah, it's like you got the candy and the big Slim Jim beef jerkies, and then their Magic cards right next to that.
you got the three basic necessities of life.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah.
There have been some hobby games that have made the jump into the mass market.
Yeah, the best example I can think of recently is North Star Games, who produces the game Wits and Wagers. It's a very good game, and that's that game is sort of broken into the mass market in Target stores. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're a good model of a game company that put out a good game that they knew could be a crossover into the non-gamer or casual gamer market, and they've really pushed hard. And it's exciting to see. I think most people in the gaming community really applaud that, as wow, we've got one of ours into the big stores.
Right. And I think they took a good approach with it, where they released it first pretty, primarily toward the hobby gamer crowd, and it was acclaimed there, and then they moved it over, and I think it had just enough of a kind of a groundswell behind it to where, you know, if there's a non-gamer friend of yours that say, you know, "Hey, I saw this game. I saw this Wits and Wagers or whatever." Then the gamer friend can be like, "Oh yeah, that's a great game. You know, you've got to pick that up." So I think they did a good thing by testing the waters in the hobby game market, and then bringing it over into the mass market, and it's done well. Apples to Apples did a similar thing. It got a lot of acclaim.
Yeah,
and
that's
moved
a huge
over,
game
and
now.
It's got even more popular.
Yeah, it's funny when you take a game like Wits and Wagers and you teach some non-gamers how to play it. and they say, well, wow, this is really great. Where can I get this game? And your response is, well, if you go down to the little game store with the with the crazy fat guy behind the counter who won't talk to you, you know, you can get it there. They'll say, oh, that's great. I'll just, yeah. But if you're able to say, oh, no, I can, you can find this game at Target, then that's going to, you know, prompt more sales and spread the gaming love.
What do you think will be the next hobby game that makes the jump? Pop quiz hot shot.
Oh, gosh.
I think it's going to be Ticket to Ride. I think within a year or two, you're going to see, I mean, now they've got so many different editions, you know, Ticket to Ride edition, as we joke. I think you'll start to see the main game, the United States version, kind of make the jump. They may tweak a few things, but I think it's got a shot.
Yeah, I think so, too. And that's another one that just about every non-gamer I've ever taught that game to have at least said, yeah, this is pretty cool, I'd play it again. Yeah. And I've had some people that have literally gone to their local game store that I've suggested to buy the game just because they've enjoyed it so much.
Right. Now, we do have a list of some mass market games that we would recommend.
Yeah, we don't want to cast like a dark shadow in these games and say that none of them are worth buying, because there are some that are not worth buying.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
but there are some that really have some merit to them, and some that are really exceptional games.
There's some diamonds in the rough out there if you know where to look.
Yeah, so we just want to mention a few of those.
I'll start it off. HeroScape is a game on favorite.
Oh, absolutely. Well, actually, one of my favorite games, hobby game or no.
Oh yeah, I think as far as miniatures games go, it's one of the best blends of just action and a rule set that you'll find. The rules, I think, are detailed enough to where there's variance in the cards, but it's simple enough to where it doesn't drag down where you're looking up abilities and you're looking up different rules. The game just flows very well, and it seems very exciting. And there's dice.
There's lots of dice. Yeah. And, you know, the fact that it is expandable but not collectible in the traditional sense. You get those clear blister packs where you know which figures you're buying. I think that really has made it a real diamond in the rough in the mass market. The fact that you can find it just about anywhere. And another game that you'll find in your local Target store, and maybe some others, but I've found it in Target, is the game Blokus, or possibly Blockus, depending on... Okay, maybe it's Blockus. But this is a nice abstract strategy game for four players.
I prefer the travel version, which
the two-player
is,
game?
Which is a two-player one.
Yeah, and I've never... There's one called Blockus Trigon, or Trigon, that's triangular pieces. That one looks pretty cool, too, but I haven't played that one yet. But that one is an excellent abstract strategy game, so I'd recommend that one as well.
We're also big Risk fans.
I'm a moderate Risk fan.
Are you?
Yeah, it's okay.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
I think it's a good introductory war game as far as that goes.
Yeah, and...
I think if you can get someone interested in Risk, a good next step would be your Battle Lore or something along those lines.
Yep, and you know, there's actually a new version of Risk that just came out in the last few months that has some different rules and different objectives that go along with it. It's also kind of some new artwork.
Yeah,
so,
I saw that.
Yeah,
that
might be worth picking up.
We mentioned Apples to Apples earlier. That's, I think, the quintessential party game. If you have a lot of gatherings, I think that one's almost a must-buy.
It's a good one. I think there's a couple other in the hobby game realm that might be a little bit better. I think Anything is probably a better game in that sense. But yeah, no, you can't go wrong with that. It's a game that I have played with a bunch of different kinds of people, and you know, especially family. I think you just end up with people who never pick up games, just find themselves laughing for hours over this one.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so another game that I really enjoy that's in the mass market, it's sort of a party game, is the game Imagine If. And I think they just came out with a new anniversary edition of this game, so I just saw that recently. But in this game, you gather together a bunch of folks that you know, or maybe some that you don't, and you're going to be asking questions about the people that are around the table. So you might ask a question like, imagine if Cody were a mode of transportation. Which mode of transportation would he be? And there's six choices, like pogo stick, 67 Chevy Impala, you know? And then everybody votes on which answer they think everybody else will pick. And
which mode of transportation would I be?
I think maybe a Saturn SC.
Thanks.
I don't know.
As a semi-proud Saturn owner.
Right? Yeah, there you go. Thank you. I couldn't think of anything that wasn't going to be insulting.
An ice cream truck.
Yeah. That's a really fun game. That's one that can really get people laughing and enjoying themselves.
Wits and Wagers, we mentioned earlier. That one is a great bridge for trivia folks and non-trivia folks, because John and I like to play games like Trivial Pursuit.
Absolutely.
But there are some people that detest trivia games for whatever reason, and Wits and Wagers rewards both those sets. It's, if you're good at trivia, then there's a little thing in there for you. But even if you're not, you can kind of leech off the people that are good. So
yeah,
it has a neat mechanic that way.
When I bring out the game, I always tell people, this is a trivia game where it doesn't matter if you know the answers. And all the people that hate trivia go, oh, really? That sounds good.
Go on.
Yeah.
We mentioned Sorry Sliders earlier.
Great dexterity game. It's kind of a new game, so put still that one undefeated. On your radar. Yeah. So, until tonight, we're playing that after the show.
Whatever. I'll beat you again. And then there's a new Yahtzee game out there.
Yeah, it's a new version of Yahtzee that actually was designed by Richard Borg of all
Battle Lore fame. Yeah.
Yeah, Battle Lore and the Commands and Colors system. So yeah, he's come up with a new arrangement version of Yahtzee that's it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that sometime.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's time to get into our Buy, Try, or Deny, where we'll talk about Wizard's Gambit. What do you say, John?
Sounds great.
Buy, Try, or Deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started.
Welcome to Buy, Try, or Deny. This episode we're going to be talking about Wizard's Gambit, a new card game from Griffin Forge Games. It was released this year in 2008 and designed by Eric Drever and Matthew Stipes. It's for 2 to 5 players and it retails for about $20. We'll go ahead and start off by talking about the game components. This is a pretty simple card game, so the game
should not take you
long. No, it won't take a long time to get through the components. Basically, you're going to get a whole bunch of cards. There's 4 kinds of cards in the game. Spell cards, component cards, incantation cards, and gambit cards. And that's it.
That's it. And, and a nice box.
And a nice box to put it in, yeah. So that's real easy. But in Wizard's Gambit, the goal of the game is to attain 10 points worth of spell cards. And you're going to claim spells in the game by playing spell components or ingredients that are listed on the spell card. So let me just go over the game setup real quick, and then we'll go over a game turn. So when you set up the game, you're going to start off by placing the shuffling and then placing the spell deck into the middle of the table. And you're going to draw 4 spell cards and place them around the spell deck. And they're going to go in like 90 degree angles, so you'll have four spells around that deck. Then you're going to deal everybody 1 gambit card to start the game off with. We'll go over in a second what the gambit cards do, but everybody's going to start off by getting 1 dealt to them. And then the rest of them are going to get shuffled back into the component deck. And then after that's shuffled, everyone is going to be dealt 5 cards. So what you're going to do is turn over that gambit card that you receive, and at the bottom there's going to be a Roman numeral. And whoever has the highest Roman numeral gets to be the start player.
It's an interesting mechanic for it.
Yeah, I kind of like that. That's sort of a built-in way of choosing the start player. Kind of neat. So on your turn, you're going to do possibly 2 things, but there's 1 thing you have to do. On your turn, you must play a spell component if you're able to. And these spell component cards that you get, they're going to have a color and a symbol associated with them. They're going to be things like Sundered Agate and Griffin Feather and Siren's Tears and stuff like that. You know, things that you'd put in a potion.
Snickers bar. Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew. cornstarch.
Let's move on.
And so you have to play a spell component if you're able to onto 1 of the spells. Each of the spell cards is going to have a certain number of these symbols on them, and that's going to be the number of ingredients that have to be played in order to claim that card. And so if you're not able to play a spell component onto 1 of the spells that's on the table, you have to show your hand to all of the rest of the players to prove that you can't play. and then you're going to draw two cards, and that will be the end of your turn. And so the way it's going to work is that if you place the last component on a spell, then you're going to claim that spell for your own spell pool, which is going to be the pile of spells that are right in front of you, and you're going to get the points for that spell. So I think the lowest number of components that a spell will have will be 3. I think the largest we saw was 9.
Right.
And so if for like a 3-component spell, that might be worth 1 point. The one with 9 components might be worth 5 or 6 or something like that. Or
5. 5's the max.
5's the max. Okay. Yep. Yeah. And so the goal is to get 10 points. So you're trying to sort of position yourself so that you're the last person to play a component onto the spell. In that way, it's sort of like if you ever play the game Cutthroat Caverns. Mm-hmm. I found it to be sort of similar in that way that you're trying to, in that game, you're trying to deal the last killing blow to a monster. And in this case, you're trying to play the last component to get the spell.
Right. The fact that you have to play a component on your turn, even if you don't want to, that adds to the tension there.
Right. And so you have to do that. And then you have the option of doing what's called an incantation step. So these other kind of cards that are in the deck are the incantation cards, and these are going to be different kinds of abilities and effects that are going to happen. For example, there's one called Lost Hope where a target opponent loses their next turn. So they're very sort of collectible card game style
draw
abilities.
Draw cards.
Like and yeah, so yeah. So you can play one of those in addition to playing your spell component. Or if instead of playing an incantation card, you also have the option of playing a gambit card. And so the gambit cards are, I think, the most interesting part of the game, the most unique element. And if you're going to start off with one gambit card, everybody gets one, but then you also may draw more from the deck later on in the game. And so there are 3 things that you can do with a gambit card. The first one is called an aura of protection.
Ooh.
And what you can do is you can place your gambit card on a particular spell, and that will make it so that only you can place components or ingredients onto that spell. So it sort of reserves it for you. Another thing you can do with a gambit card is to cancel the effect of an active spell. One thing I neglected to mention about these spell cards is once you claim a spell, you're going to get the points for that spell. But then the spell is also going to have some text on the card, and whichever spell is at the top of your spell pool,
your most recently acquired one,
right, the one you got most recently, that's going to be your active spell. And so whatever the text of the card says, that's what's going to be the standing effect. So for example, there's one called Haste, and that says you may play 2 component cards during your turn. So that would be your active spell. So someone could play a gambit card to cancel the effect of that spell, and they would just place it on top of your spell card, and you would not get that effect.
Right. We found that the lower the point value of the spell, the better the effect. I think the 1 5-point spell in the deck has a really nasty active effect on
it. Yeah,
it's
actually a negative of something that affects you negatively.
So there's a price you pay for getting the big boy spells.
Right. So that would be a situation where you could even play a gambit card on your own active spell if you have one that's bad that you
exactly.
don't really want to have the effect happen. So that's the second thing you can do with a gambit card. The third thing that you can do is to cancel the effect of another player's gambit. So if someone has placed a gambit card onto a spell to reserve it for them, that aura of protection, you can play a gambit card to destroy their gambit card, and that'll open that spell back up again. So those are the 3 things that you can do with the gambit cards. If you find that you're ever out of cards entirely, then that ends your turn immediately, and you'll draw up to 5 cards. And you also have to discard down to 5 cards at the end of your turn if you end up with more cards than that. And so the game will just continue, everybody taking their turns, playing these component cards, claiming spells, playing gambit cards and incantation cards until someone gets to 10 points. And whoever gets to 10 points is the winner.
That's it.
That's it. So nice and easy.
Yep.
So let's just go ahead and discuss it. I'll just go ahead and just throw it down right now, Cody. Wizard's Gambit, buy, try, or deny.
Unequivocally, it's a buy. I mean, I really like this game much more than I thought I would. The theme works with it. It's got a lot of strategy, but yet it's not overwhelming on the rules. And I just had a lot of fun with it. I played with you a few times, and I even played that over the weekend. Another one of my friends purchased it at Gen Con, and we played a few hands of that. And I just can't get enough of this game. I want to go out and buy a copy right now, actually. It's like I like it that much. So Highly recommended it. It'll probably take you half an hour to an hour to play, depending on how many folks you got around the table, but definitely pick it up. It is a buy. John, what do you think? Buy, try, or deny?
You know, I'm actually going to give this just a try.
You're wrong.
Well, you know, won't be the first time. Yeah, won't be the last. But no, I have to give it a try. I can't give it a full buy just because, and this is maybe just a personal thing, I don't like games where I feel like I'm forced to do something. I mean, I guess I like having a lot of choices in my games. Just the fact that you have to play a component card, even if you don't want to. I guess I just don't like that.
The game would never end otherwise.
Well, I think they could create some mechanics that would prevent that from happening. But I just sort of felt like I was limited in what I was able to do, because a lot of times the incantation cards weren't real helpful. I have to play a spell component even when I don't want to. And but I mean, it still has a lot of, it's well designed. It has a lot of positive qualities. It's a relatively short game. It's not going to go on for 2 hours, so that's a good thing. So I mean, I give it a positive review. It's a good game, and I think people should go out and try it. But it's not quite good enough for me to give it the full buy.
Too bad.
Well, you know,
I really don't want to give this one away. I want to keep it for myself.
Well, we can't do that.
I know. We will pass on the love to our listeners.
Yeah. So, maybe I'll buy you a copy for Christmas.
Well, hey, I'll take it. Okay. So just to recap, I gave Wizard's Gambit a buy, which is the correct answer, and John, you gave it a try.
A try.
All right.
It's time for a Game On bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review.
What?
That's right, Cody. It's a Game On bonus review.
No.
Yep. Some weeks there's just too many good games to do one review.
I'm
we got to
prepared
do...
for this.
Yeah, well, thankfully I am. Well, you know, in the big deal segment, we talked about a lot of mass market games that we like, and the last one we mentioned was Yahtzee Free For All.
We did,
and so we're gonna do a bonus review of Yahtzee Free For All.
Let's
for the
do
listeners.
It. We
let's
played it.
It. Yeah, we played it. It. Okay, I just purchased it recently, and so let's go over that one.
Bonus review.
Yahtzee Free For All was designed by Richard Borg in 2008 and has been produced by Hasbro. It's for 2 to 6 players and retails for about $20 at any local big box store, Walmart, Target, wherever you want to find it. I found it just about everywhere. And so in this variant on Yahtzee, players are going to roll dice to match the combinations that are shown on cards to get points. And they will also have the ability to steal those points from other players by possibly rolling better.
It's cool.
So it adds that element of
Yahtzee
conflict.
Plus.
Yahtzee plus a little bit of conflict.
Treachery.
Treachery. So let's go over those game components. The game components of this game are a little bit strange because the game itself is in a hexagonal box.
Mm-hmm.
And so the art on the front makes it look like a three-dimensional cube, like a die, a six-sided die. And when you take off the lid to the box and turn it over, you'll see that the underside of the box lid has like a felt material glued to it. So it looks like a dice tray.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah. So it's like a built-in dice tray.
Very cool.
Yeah. And as you lift up that box lid, you're going to see that the board itself is wrapped around this plastic tray. So the board itself sort of unfolds, and the bottom of the box is really the bottom of the board.
Yeah.
So these six sort of
leaves
are gonna unfold from the
very weird but very functional
very cool. And then this big plastic tray, you'll pull that out, and in the plastic tray there is a deck of cards, and we'll talk about those in a second. You're gonna get a stack of these really neat contoured black chips. Those are cool too. And you're gonna get 30 six-sided dice.
Yes.
So let's go over the game setup. It's real easy. You're going to unfold this board and kind of straighten it out. You're going to take out of the card deck, there are 6 Yahtzee cards, and you're going to pull those out and set them aside next to the game board. You're going to shuffle up the cards and set them in the middle. You're going to deal out 3 cards into the spaces that are on the board. There's spaces for 3 cards, and that's pretty much it.
Yep.
Then you're ready to go. So here's how a game turn works. On your turn, you're going to be rolling your dice up to 3 times in an effort to match one of the cards that's on the board. In the original game of Yahtzee, you have all these different combinations on your score sheet that you can try for in order to get the best score. In this game, you're going to have three cards on the board that show different combinations, like full house, three of a kind,
small straight, large straight,
small straight, large straight. You can
sixes,
fives. You know, to roll a certain number.
We've
of
assumed
those.
You've played Yahtzee.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you've never played Yahtzee, then you might want to go and check the rules for regular Yahtzee sure. first. But it's not going to be the learning curve is not that steep.
No.
And so you're going to be matching one of these cards. So if you match a card with your dice roll and you know, you roll the dice up to three times. You can re-roll as many dice as you want, but by your third roll, you have to be done. And if you match one of the combinations on those cards, you're going to put your dice into the slot on the board that's for your space on the board. And then you're going to claim that card and place it on your home space. This is a space that's right in front of the slot where your dice go. And so you'll claim this card right now, but you're only going to get to bank those points at the beginning of your next turn. And so it's possible that another player might steal those points before it gets back around to you. And that's really the very fun part mm-hmm. of this game. So you're going to draw a new card to replace the one that you just took, and then play will pass to the left. So the next player can then try to roll and claim a card that's in the middle, just like before, or they can try to claim the card in another player's home space. So it gives them a few more options. And you can steal another player's card by rolling better than they did. So if one player has three of a kind card and they rolled three twos, if you rolled, for example, three fours, then you would be able to steal that card because you got a better three of a kind than they did. So if you steal another player's card, then that's going to go into your home space. And if you steal a card, or if you bust, which means that you don't, at the end of your three rolls, you don't get any combination that matches any of the cards, then you're going to take these black chips and you're going to place one chip next to each card that's on the board, just the three cards that are in the middle.
Right.
And so these chips are free points that you're going to get immediately. You don't have to wait to bank them. So in a later turn, if someone rolls one of the combinations that's on the card in the middle, they're going to get to take the card and put it on their home space, and they're going to get the chip, and they'll get that chip will count for 1 point immediately.
Right. That adds some strategy to it that normally wasn't there, I think. You know, it's like, do you go for stealing other people's players, or do you just go for the free immediate points?
Right. And as if people bust a lot or steal cards a lot, then you're going to continue to add chips. So as it goes around the table, you could have, especially a card that's difficult to get, like a large straight, you could eventually end up with four or five or six chips on that card. So it gives you more of an incentive to try for that particular roll. If you get a Yahtzee, which a Yahtzee is a five of a kind, then you're going to claim one of the Yahtzee cards that's on the side of the board. They're worth 10 points. That's the most of any of the cards that's in the game. And you'll place that onto your home space. The Yahtzee cards can still be stolen, however, if someone later rolls a higher Yahtzee, which would be really hard.
Right.
It's, you don't get Yahtzees that often, but it is possible to steal that if you get a better one. So play will continue until the deck of cards runs out or the chips run out and the highest score wins. So it's a real simple game. If you've played regular Yahtzee, then this is just adds a couple of extra rules and some pretty interesting ones too. So we'll just launch right into it. Cody, Yahtzee free-for-all, the bonus review, buy, try, or deny.
See, the bonus review's got me all thrown off because I'm about to give two buys in one episode.
Crazy.
Yeah, so definitely a buy. It's I like Yahtzee by itself. I play it on my iPhone all the time. It's like it's got dice. I like it. But this Yahtzee free-for-all adds a lot more player interaction, cuts down on the downtime a little bit, and just makes it fun for everyone, and it sort of, I would say, works as a very basic gateway game into adding different mechanics to old favorites. So it's worth the price. If you have Yahtzee, it's a good addition to it. And if you don't, it's a great pickup, and it's a what I would say is a great upgrade to a classic. So definitely a buy from me. John, what would you say? Buy, try, or deny?
This one is a definite buy.
You got one right.
For the, I'm going to have to go back and revise my review on Wizard's Gambit.
No. It was fine.
But for Yahtzee free-for-all, definitely a buy. You know, I never really played the original Yahtzee very much. Actually, my grandmother played Yahtzee with friends of hers for years and years, and I was never that interested in it. But this game and the element of being able to steal other players' cards, it really keeps it interactive, and you feel like you have something to do when it's not your turn, because you're worried about whether right. someone's going to steal your card.
There's tension
yeah.
in Yahtzee.
Yeah, it's tension in Yahtzee. Who knew? So I give this an emphatic buy, especially since you can pick this up at your local Walmart or local right. store. This is not going to be a difficult one to find, I don't think, especially if you live in the United States. So I would definitely encourage you to go and pick this one up, Yahtzee Free For All.
So to recap, I gave it a buy, and John gave it a buy as well.
That's two buys.
All right. Sounds good to me. We sound like senators from Indiana there. Two buys.
Hi-oh. Hey-o.
No
one gets that joke.
Exactly. Political humor. Well, what do you say we close out the show?
Sounds good.
Well, that wraps up the unprecedented fifth episode of Game On with Cody and John.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Hard to believe.
Made it through five.
And we thank you, the listeners, as always. John, why don't you tell listeners how to contact us?
All right. Well, if you have any gaming news, notes, questions, comments, feedback, or as we say, brilliant ideas, feel free to contact us at the Game On Inbox. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And you can also check out our website at gameonpodcast.com.
Yep. We have a Board Game Geek Guild. It's guild number 576. You can also just look for it under guilds. Feel free to join our Game On Guild if you haven't already, and get involved in some of the discussions that are there. And we definitely want you to post a picture if you can, because
that is our contest for this episode. Post a picture of you and yours playing whatever game you want, and you'll be entered in our random drawing to win our demo copy of Wizard's Gambit from Griffin Forge Games.
And we want to remind you about a special event that's going to be happening. It's Worldwide Wing Night 5, the gaming holiday invented by the Fear the Boot podcast. We're going to be doing our Game On edition of that at the Buffalo Wild Wings on the south side of Indianapolis off US 31. Link for that is in the show notes. But from 7 to 11, we'll be doing our Game On edition of Worldwide Wing Night.
That's right. We'll have lots of food, lots of drinks, and lots of games. And if you plan on coming from wherever, Indianapolis or beyond, RSVP us at the Game On Inbox.
Yeah, definitely. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to know if you're coming, and tell us what game you're bringing.
Definitely, and look for the big Game On sign. It should be quite easy to spot us.
So join us in 2 weeks for episode 6, where we're going to be talking about lots of great stuff and giving you a review of Oko.
Bless you.
Thank you. Oko Era of the Asagiri.
That sounds cool.
Yeah,
that sounds Ameritrash.
You probably have never heard of it, but it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. So join us for that review, and until then, check us out on the forums, and
Game On. Yes, the gaming capital of the world. We are stepping up, and we are hosting our own Game On Worldwide Wing Night.
That's right. Which will involve... Why did I cut in?
It's not just me.
Oh, man.
Blah, blah, games, blah.
Blah, 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 games, blah.
Et cetera.